Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Ja, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Unsere Krankenhäuser sind immer für uns da. Tag und Nacht. In ganz Deutschland. Sie möchten mehr zur neuen Krankenhausreform wissen? Dann sind Sie hier richtig. Krankenhaus-mit-zukunft.de. Eine Information des Bundesministeriums für Gesundheit.
In late 2019, fires started around the continent of Australia. Not an uncommon issue, and has been a recurring problem that's plagued the place for many hundreds of years. What no one knew was how bad this fire was going to be. Over 2,500 houses were reported to be lost, over 8,000 buildings in total. Many lives were claimed, both man and animal, with a predicted over 1 billion animals perished. It has been one of the most earth-changing natural disasters in the last decade. A beautiful effect was the unification of the people, not just in Australia and the neighbouring countries, but from all over the world. Firefighters from many countries banded together to fly over and help. Many more volunteers vowed to pitch in, and many financial pots were put together to chip in support. Though I wish I could have been as brave as the firefighters that were fighting back the elements during the height of the fires, I resigned myself to my personal limitations and volunteered to join the search and rescue teams. There were no shortages of jobs, and very quickly I was pit together with a handful of fresh recruits to help clean through a small rural town that was one of the first hit during the devastation. Though many of us were foreign, our leadership fell on some more experienced rescue volunteers that were local to Australia. Motivated with only good intentions, we made our way to the site. The town was a mess. Charred remains stood where homes had once been. Black and ash stained everything, an ominous obsidian. A few of the volunteers weren't mentally prepared enough and broke down at the sight of their first body. We all had to get over that very quickly. Something we were informed about, a side objective, if you will, was a well that sat in the middle of this town. Apparently, this town was developed upon an Aboriginal settlement, and that well had a lot of sentimental and historical value. So to check on its well-being was added to our list of tasks, though it wasn't personally our highest priority, as we wished with all our hearts to find survivors above all else. Whilst the team scoured the grounds for clues of any living persons, me and a partner made our way to the centre, trying to get this side objective out of the way so we could all knuckle down on the more important task at hand. When we arrived, we were dismayed somewhat that the well, though it was made of solid rock, must have been weakened over time in the fires and had collapsed outward. A strange direction for the walls to have fell, but at that moment, odd physics wasn't something we paid full mind to. We wanted to turn back, but I had it in my head to check the rocks to see if they could be refurbished and assembled again. Something that I felt could have been a nice consolation to make up for the loss. What I didn't expect was to hear something strange as I approached. From the hole of which the well was built over, I could hear the faintest of whispers carry through the cavern. Adrenaline kicked in as I shot into action, piecing together one thing. A survivor was in the well, having jumped in to escape the infernos. I called for backup over the radio and had my partner wrap me up, ready for an abseil. By the time the others had arrived, I was ready to go in. It should have been easy. Anyone who knows about wells should tell you that what we should have been prepared for was an easy and quick in-and-out job. Drop in, grab whomever was at the bottom, and get out. Still, despite the confidence, we were still careful and used the longest rope we had. Overkill, but comforting. Before long, I was abseiling into the abyss, and the earth swallowed me whole. Something which was straight away apparent was how long it was taking to reach the bottom. Meters and meters of rope slid by me as I sunk further and further into the ground. By the time I reached the bottom, the rope was nearly out. The radio just about made contact, and I informed them of such. It was taken as unfortunate, but a necessary part of the rescue, and I told them I'd make the rest of the journey on foot. They replied with confusion, until I pointed out that the well didn't just end with a pool or a damp chamber, but led into what appeared to be a dried-out tunnel. What water used to flood these routes must have been flash evaporated by the fires. The last transmission I sent through was an important instruction. If they felt two sharp tugs on the rope, to pull me up as hard as they could. At that, I moved further in, and the signal died. From the bottom, I lost all sense of the people above, their mutters dying out the deeper I went into the cavern. They were replaced by the whispers. When I was at the top, I could not discern anything about the whispers, but in the thick of the tunnels, I could make out details more clearly. For a start, the whispers sounded like that of a child, possibly a boy, and whatever they were muttering on about, it wasn't in English. My mind raced with ideas of someone who was on vacation, having lived through such a traumatic event, and I hoped that the child remains above were not his parents looking for him. Another part of me thought that it was maybe a native, someone who knew about the tunnels and used them for a quick escape. These ideas swam around while I used my best sense of echolocation to try track the origins of the sound. The only light I had was a standard issue flashlight that came with a makeshift rescue pack given to volunteers. Though it was adequate for highlighting things on the surface, in the inky blackness of the underground, it was suboptimal to say the least. The walls of the tunnel was etched away with time, seemingly degraded with the flows of water long gone. However, the deeper I went, the more the etchings started to form a sort of pattern. And many meters in, they went from smooth to long veins of curves with detailing etched in. The walls looked like they were layered with rows and rows of overlapping snakes, with no head or tail, just continuous overlaps of serpentine details. Putting it away in my mind, I focused on my journey, edging closer and closer to the source of the voice. Since there was nothing else to focus on, my ears were sensitive to every sound in the tunnel. Drips echoed and left an impression in my mind of the darkness. My footsteps resounded with thooms, no matter how softly I tried to tread. But a sound which were alien to me were the grumbles that overlapped my sounds and the voice. At first, I thought it was just abnormal cave sounds, but the more I concentrated, the more a truth formed in my head that I tried so hard to deny. They sounded throaty. Something that originated from a living creature. My dim light forced me to cling to the walls for direction. As long as my left hand slid along the serpentine walls, I knew I was going straight. The rock was cold but smooth, the dry scale details being so intrinsically carved that they were barely picked up by my sliding fingers. It was because of this consistency that I immediately picked up on something wrong the second my hand slid across something different. My senses were assaulted by, not smooth, dry stone, but something slimy, soft, and warm. My heart jumped, and so did I, away from what my hand was on, and the wall jumped too. I flung around to briefly catch sight of my soon-to-be assailant, and nothing could have prepared me for the sight. My eyes were assaulted with a colour red, flaring all across its face and body. My eyes drew to its eyes, though it was hard to focus on both at once since they were so far apart. Its lips trembled, before the fastest thing I'd ever seen from a natural source shot out of its mouth. I flinched, and it slapped on my backpack, yanking it clean off my back at a force which nearly took my joints with it. Thank God for the cheap stitching of the straps. The tongue sucked the pack into its mouth, and while it mulled over if it was me it caught, seeming to not use its eyes that were glazed over like you'd see on many blind subterranean animals, I ran away as fast as I could. My breaths caught in my throat as I struggled to compose myself over the sudden rush of cardio. But after making my way nearly halfway back, I felt safe enough to stop and catch my breath, lest I black out from hyperventilation. Vying for my energy back to make my way to the surface, a reminder of my mission soothed into my ears. The whispers, fainter again from the distance, slid into my ears. Despite all my sense of self-preservation, my sense of duty came forth, knowing I came all the way to Australia to help in any way I can. My self-preservation be damned. And though it wasn't against the fire I'd mentally prepared myself for, and instead was something I could only relate to a monstrous frog, I made it my goal to save whoever was inside. My theory was that the child was trapped inside due to this frog thing, and knew of the dangers of trying to escape on their own. I eased back down the tunnel, a plan forming in my head with each step I took. It wasn't hard to find where the creature lay. My flashlight still lay on the ground where it was dropped, facing off into the tunnel. I used it as an indicator to source where the creature was hiding. When I was only a few meters away, I put my back to the wall and gently eased towards the hidden opening. As soon as my fingers crossed the threshold where the creature hid, I balled my hand up in a fist and swung it straight into the creature's eye. It was huge and hard to miss, and let me tell you, though the eye had long since lost the vision, they hadn't lost their pain receptors, and whatever it was that hid in there slinked away deeper into its opening, but not before its tongue shot out one last time in a panic and honed in on the flashlight, swallowing everything around me in darkness. I took this opportunity to push forward, making the most of the linear nature of the tunnel, and ran deeper to close in on the source of the whispers. By now, the whispers had developed into whimpers, probably from the sound of commotion breaking the peace of the silent tunnel. With everything out here that I now knew of, and maybe things I didn't, I wasn't surprised that whoever it was hiding away would be scared of anything closing in. Further along, there were a series of gaps in the wall leading into smaller chambers. Though I got it wrong a few times, I eventually found a small crevasse that held the source of the crying. In the still darkness, I muttered words of encouragement, trying to sound as soothing as possible, knowing that, though my words were alien to him, my tone wouldn't be. But before I could give persuasion for him to move into my arms, a sound filled the silence. A wet, sloppy splat that echoed every few seconds. A consistent sound that was easing closer and closer. At this, I hushed and urged the child to do the same. They bounded closer and closer and closer. I hoped with every morsel of my being that it had just bounced right past. But it didn't. It stopped right outside the opening, and I pressed myself against the wall, hoping to anything that it would not come in. However, the child didn't have the same reservations, and started to whisper once more. This seemed to satiate the creature outside, which started to make a few gagging sounds, before retching something up on the floor, then moving on. I looked down, and the dim silhouette made me recognize it as my backpack, half digested. It had emergency food in it, and the child slopped them up greedily. The creature moved deeper into the tunnel, possibly in search for me. I knew this was my one chance of escape, and I was determined to rescue the child. So, while he was scrambling for food, I scooped him up and ran. He immediately started screaming and wailing. I knew he was probably hungry and hated being taken away from what was probably his first meal in so long. But I also knew that there was plenty of food on the surface. So I put that guilt as a necessary evil to ensure we could both escape in one piece. The screams triggered the attention of whatever was moving away, and the rhythmic bounces that were once slipping away came towards us at full force. Every few steps I took, the creature bounced towards us. I had no idea how to tell the pace of its movement, my only indicator being how close it sounded. And a daunting realization was settling in as I ran, that it was getting too close for comfort. Before I felt exhaustion about to take away my ability to sprint, I made it to the rope, which glowed in the open light overhead. By now, the child was kicking and screaming, trying to scramble away. Poor thing must have felt mortified that he was going to be eaten or something. All the while, the creature hastily chased. I took the rope twice and held on the best I could, not having time to wrap it around me. No movement. Fear sank in, knowing that time was not on our side. So I tugged over and over and over again, the code be damned. Before long, there was movement, and we were being whisked up, away from the cavern, the creature, and the strange, serpentine tunnel. The light was fading ahead, and the voices above were a murmur of confusion, probably because of the childlike screaming slowly emerging from the tunnel, and my panicked shouting. Don't worry, mine wasn't the childlike screaming, though the people at the top would probably challenge that. By the time we reached the top, it was just me screaming, and the child quietened down. It took longer than I'd care to admit for them to calm me down. My composure from earlier breaking down in the safety of the outside world. The question that broke me out of my spell was, why did you bring that thing up? That thing, I thought. That was a child, a survivor out of the many who did not have that luxury. Many thoughts like this were whizzing around my head, until I looked down and understood what they meant. In my arms was not a boy, but a dried up husk of some kind. I would have been mortified that this was some paranormal type twist where it was the spirit of a child who died in the well or something, but the thing I was holding didn't even look human. And it was too specific to be an accidental formation of the earth. As it crumbled when I put it down, my world crumbled too. I needed to be taken away, as I worried many of the people I was with, all but one. When I was placed in the ambulance to be driven back to HQ, to the frustration of some of the others, who thought it was a waste to use such a useful resource myself on what they thought was just a mental breakdown, one of the local reps came over to talk to me. Though he couldn't tell me much due to the limited time and seemingly a tone of reservation, he instead gave instruction on where to find information. He told me to look into the Aboriginal folklore of the land. At first, I thought he sounded as crazy as I did. But the more I looked into it, the more I identified with. The rainbow serpent, a creature that was said to replenish stores of water, forming gullies and deep channels as he slithers across the landscape, allowing for the collection and distribution of water. This sounded eerily familiar to the strangely perfect tunnel system that the natives must have built a well around long ago for its abundance of water. I found information on the Yaramanyahu, a red frog-like creature that was said to hide in trees to wait for unsuspecting victims to consume. It's easy to imagine they might have long since moved underground to hide away from the rapid development of the modern world. It's also a theory that they might have adapted to live alongside other creatures with the same intentions, similar to those frogs in the wild that adopt spiders to protect their eggs. And the creature could have been an unknown race mentioned in Yolngu folklore. Not much is known about them, but maybe they lived underground. And for good reason. Because when the sun hits their skin, they dry up into a husk almost instantly.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.